everyone, and welcome to Advanced Engineering Talks, a podcast created by the Advanced Engineering team. ATalks brings together some of the newest and most innovative minds in engineering and manufacturing to help better the future for our industry. We hope you enjoy the series.
Well, hello and welcome everybody again to our Advanced Engineering Talks podcast series, where innovation never sleeps. You may have already listened, hopefully you have actually, to our interview and discussion with Melissa Quinn, the head of Spaceport Cornwall, regarding the economic and sustainable development of space. Well, there's more where that came from, and in this podcast, we continue with more discussion with Melissa and my co-host Gary Cannon from the Satellite Applications Catapult, including issues surrounding the growth of the sector in the UK and skills and talent required to fill the gaps for what's a really exciting sector, of course. So I'll leave you with this, and please do enjoy.
Something else I wanted to ask about we were talking about where the space industry is going and what's important is the whole STEM piece, because it's become so apparent to me as I've moved through my career that there's not enough people coming into the space industry to service the growth of that industry. So I know, Melissa, you guys have been doing a lot of work on STEM down in Spaceport Cornwall. I wonder if you could share with us your experiences of some of the things you've done, and talks with schools and getting the kids into the spaceport and so on.
Yeah, it was our whole outreach program is born out of some personal frustration I have with this industry, which is everybody in it is doing really cool things and they're amazingly skilled, talented, just incredible people with, you know, I mean, the coolest jobs I've ever come across in any industry. Yet, for some reason, they're not very good at communicating that to the average person, let alone a child beyond kind of primary school. You know, I don't know what it is. And there's a disconnect between the industry and the general population. And this kind of like, oh, that's for only really, really clever people that build rockets or are astronauts. That's just the mentality and the stereotype that's out there, that's been out there for quite a while. And that it got to me because I'm not one of those people yet. I was heading up a spaceport. So I was like, right, this industry has got to start to do a better job of communicating how amazing it is. And do it in a way that's digestible and that people can really get behind and get excited about. And for me, that all came from, initially it was really ad hoc. We didn't have really an official program. I just started going into schools and talking to them about what I did and how I got into it. And for me, it's really easy to get young kids excited about space launch. It's like, who here loves rockets? And they're all like, yeah. But the minute you get to secondary school, it's like, meh, yeah. There's like a few hands and they're usually boys. And and so I started just to kind of collect all those little things. And so for us, it was developing, and now our outreach program is quite big. It's the reason that we do this job. I always say, like, if we ever launch, great, but actually the success of this project has been the thousands, if not almost millions of children now that we've engaged with. The fact that 8 years ago, when I was in those primary schools talking to them, they're now writing me letters and emails and posting on social media from university with their, you know, engineering degree about to go and work for Airbus or Prime or something, you know, and they're like, look, I remember when you came into my school down on the Lizard in Cornwall and told me about this. So we're starting to see now this, that we are making an impact, a positive one. Our main message when we go into the schools is space is exciting. It's on your doorstep. It's growing. And here are the ways to get into it. And I think that's what's sometimes been missing is those direct pathways. And also then it's the thing about the space industry is it crosses everything else. And so for me, it's like, right, you're interested in fashion. Well, what about engineering a spacesuit that's fashionable for people going in the future? Oh, you like your parents and grandparents and grandparents and grandparents are farmers. Well, what about learning about how to grow food on Moon or Mars? Oh, you're from a military background and you're keen on going into military. Well, there's Space Force now and Space Command. You know, it's starting to open up the kids' eyes to the fact that there's kind of a career in anything you're passionate about now in the industry in some way or another. And also be putting role models in front of them that they don't quite maybe think fit a stereotype of the industry, kind of shake it up a little bit. It's been good for us. We've run just numerous things on the site. I could go on and on, but I think the highlight last year is we formed a local student group to follow us along ahead of launch and just communicate what we're up to, but for their audiences, for teenagers. And so we had this crew, our space crew, and Disney got in touch, and Pixar, for the Buzz Lightyear movie. And they're like, oh, we've heard all about this from our social media. Can we invite them up to the premiere? And so they got to go up and they got to interview all the crew and staff. And, you know, these are like podcasters and video guys and girls. And, you know, for them now, they're really excited about a career in communicating space. And so I just think we have a responsibility in this industry to do a better job of telling our own stories. And I can sit and talk to any individual in this industry, and I'm still like, wow, that's amazing. You do that and you came from there. And, you know, and we all have these incredible stories to tell, and we've just got to get out there and start to tell them in a way is as exciting as what we do. And so that's kind of what's at the heart of it. I'm passionate about getting more girls interested in careers in the industry. Yeah. And again, that comes from me just going in and talk. I never had anybody that looked like me come and talk to about launching about space or anything like that, even engineering. So I think, you know, we have that responsibility to go out and do it. We've been engaged with every single school in Cornwall. We do broadcasts that go out to hundreds of thousands of kids across the UK. Tim Peake's kind of taken a lot of his STEM inspiration brunt and put it onto us a little bit, and we love it. And so he's been helping us quite a bit as well. So it's fundamental. I have had about over 1,000 letters from children in the last 2 weeks about the launch. It's been really important for us to tell the story of resilience, and turning, you know, learning from failure. So that's been our message, and we've been absolutely just inundated with incredible things from school children who actually didn't even care that their satellites didn't get to where they did. They were just like, that was amazing. So yeah, I mean, it's obviously, as I'm sure you could tell, I'm really passionate and excited about that part of what we can do. Launch inspires. We saw it with Apollo. You see this great graph that shows the Apollo spend on Apollo by NASA and an uptake of STEM careers and courses in the US, and they didn't even have an outreach program when Apollo was going. And so for me, it's like, launch inspires, but let's take that inspiration and give it the right kind of pathway and kind of boost behind it. So that's what we're up to.
That's fascinating that you saw that correlation, that the gap correlation happens with the Apollo launch. And do you think as well, it's all about STEM and them, people taking those sorts of subjects more as well. I suppose, is it going to take a few years or half a generation for it to really filter through? And if that's the case, is there a bit of a worry about a gap there that needs filling in the meantime? Or are you confident that, it's going to be good?
We're confident. I mean, the UK is amazing at this industry and what we do here and the universities here. And we've got this great case study. And, you know, it's taken us 8 years to start to create incredible space employees. And we've worked really hard with local HEFE on preparing them for what's going to come from when we speak to kids in year 3 and year 5 in primary school. So, for instance, True Penwith College, we started working with them about 5 years ago on what skills we'll need on site or what Virgin Orbit might need on site. And they went away, got funding, and have built an entire space institute in Truro, which is now, you know, having local children designing, building, you know, satellites. That's just one of them. We have Cornwall College doing the same. We have University of Exeter really going for it with the environmental side of space and just global research now, working with all the big names in space because of the work that we started with them. I've written modules for a lot of these classes. We have the incredible Falmouth University, which is, you know, world leading in arts and culture, now doing, they did our VR experience for the launch, and it's amazing. And that's got loads of extra funding now from industry to start to create kind of VR and AI type experiences. It's just endless. It's, you know, I don't think there's a gap, because I think we, for some reason, I don't know how we did it really, but we just, we put it at the forefront right from the start.
And we just
went and talked to everybody at the beginning and kind of galvanized everybody behind it. And we're now kind of reaping the rewards of that and slowly growing it.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I guess the, in terms of regional as well, some of the regional benefits there in Cornwall, it's been a really positive thing, and with lots of potential, I'm guessing, in terms of employment and various engagement. Is that right?
Yeah. And again, it goes back to just how we communicate that space is actually for everyone and for every business and for every industry. Right. So we have, you know, tourism and farming and fishing, and we did a piece of work a few years ago on all the traditional industries in Cornwall and the southwest actually, and how space can benefit them, or how they can apply space to their business, similar to what this Southwest Center of Excellence for Satellite Applications, so really help working with them, and just getting people to think differently. So a marine industry or marine business here who are very good at extreme environments, well, wait a minute, couldn't you tweak what you do to space? And here's the people that might need to use it in the future. And I think once I kind of got out of my post-launch hole, I watched some amazing interviews that BBC did of businesses down in Cornwall that are traditional kind of engineering mining businesses that have adapted to using satellite data applications and are growing their business. And they were all like, oh, it's because so-and-so from Spaceport or Aerospace Cornwall came and talked to us, or we met somebody from Virgin Orbit. You know, we, it's suddenly just, you know, spreading throughout the Southwest, this kind of capability and just awareness and profile. And people kind of like balk a bit at the PR and the media stuff, but actually it just gets it into those different audiences that might not necessarily see space as something for them.
Yeah, yeah. When you say people balk at the PR and media, so what do you mean by that?
I think we had, up until launch, a lot of people thinking that we were just a big PR branding exercise.
Oh, I see.
And we didn't have much behind, you know, the facade of it, but obviously launch showing that we could do it. That stopped. But the whole, that was definitely something we planned. We wanted it to be a big PR, and our the amazing team that do our PR are not space at all, but that was the reason that we wanted to work with them, so they've been, again, able to tell these stories in a way that people can kind of understand. And we've used like local brand and design agencies to make our kind of brand something that people would want to buy. So we've sold, you know, we have a whole merchandise line. All our funds from it go to our outreach program. So it's just something that I think space industry in the UK just hasn't really seen, that kind of level of like people want to come and buy our t-shirt.
You're right.
We sold like something like 1,000+ just at the launch itself. Like it, you know, it's such an opportunity to just look at this industry a bit differently and to show it is cool. It's really cool. And people want to be part of it.
Yeah.
It is so cool. Like, just going back to something else you spoke about earlier, Melissa, was the Dream Chaser side of things with Sierra. Was it Sierra Nevada?
Sierra Space, they're called now, yeah.
Sierra Space, yeah. Yeah, that's something else we're tracking here at the Catapult, the advent of these space plates. Because, of course, are they horizontal launch? Can you tell us a bit more about the space plane concept? Because from my point of view, this is a fact. Who wouldn't want to work on planes that go to space and come back again?
They're amazing. We've been working with Sierra when they were Sierra Nevada, and now they're Sierra Space, for quite a number of years now. And it's basically a shuttle type concept. They will take off vertically and they'll return horizontally. So they're looking at a few sites around the world where they can return to. And they have so many amazing plans. Initially, yeah, Dream Chaser will be going up to the ISS and delivering products, people, experiments, and coming back down again. But they have some really exciting stuff around kind of, you know, what we can do with a community in space and setting up basically a village in space in the future. And this is just the first part of that. They're based out of Denver, and they've just received the new rounds of investment, and they're just kind of going for it. But they have been really engaged with us from a wider kind of cluster development point of view. So they're a few years probably off of their very first kind of landing at Cornwall, but they're already like, right, what we'll need is this, this, and this. Business is like this, this, and this. Skill set like this, this, and this. Can you incorporate that as you're making your plan? So our buildings and facilities that we're building now, we're like, oh, right, they need a lab that's kind of like this. And future-proofing it as much as we can for all the potential operators that will come and use our site. But yeah, we're really excited about Sierra in the future, and they'll be doing their major test programs this year.
Yeah, it's cool stuff, isn't it? Going up to this, like villages in space is fascinating as well. I forget the names of there's so many things going on in space. You know, it's so hard to remember what's going on. But I know there's at least three replacements for the International Space Station. Because we're realizing that the stuff that you can do in space with that micro G environment, and obviously it's super clean. You can expose manufacturing processes to a near perfect vacuum, which helps with metallurgy, crystal growth and all that kind of stuff. There's some incredible applications that you can do up there. And yeah, like I say, there's the ISS, is it 2030? I think it's supposed to be decommissioned. It's around about that time frame. And there's people working on new space labs, and these space planes will be going up and supplying those space labs and bringing kit back. And you mentioned Space Forge before, Melissa, what they're trying to do, growing metals and creating equipment in space. It's such a great place to be at the moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and do you see that sort of manufacture happening going forward on quite a large scale? And would it be for manufacture mainly for things, objects that are being used in space, or would it be ultimately, do you think, manufacturing and creating things for use back on Earth? It would be as well, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, there's all sorts of things. You can do both, quite honestly, Jeremy, because as we're both saying, the ability to manufacture better materials and more efficient semiconductors, things like that, in that clean vacuum and micro-G environment of space has obvious benefits to equipment back on Earth. So there is going to be that market, but there's also going to be the market of assembling kit in space. So one of the, again, talking about the sustainability piece the net zero approach to the cost of rockets going up from a carbon point of view versus what they can monitor and how they help the environment. There's a company that's been launched recently, Space Solar Limited, who are looking at creating what is essentially a huge solar farm out in geostationary orbit. When I say huge, this is the orders of kilometers in diameter. You can't launch that in one hit. Mm-hmm. So this goes back to the cadence of launches required, as Melissa was talking about earlier, but also the bigger and bigger space launch capabilities like SpaceX Starship that can lift hundreds of tons into space. And of course, that's all going to need building in space, assembling in space. So again, thinking about the diversity of roles in the space economy, we're going to need roboticists to design, build and operate robotic capability in space that can grab hold of all of these individual components in orbit, put them together, link them up with an OTV, what we call an orbital transfer vehicle, that takes it out to another orbit and plugs it into another superstructure. And eventually the plan is to end up with this, like I say, kilometers wide array that will gather solar power and then beam that back to Earth. And so by doing that, it's creating an incredible saving on our carbon output, because of course that's all free energy from the sun. And then, yeah, getting that back to Earth, they're looking at ways, again, people looking at how you can beam power back to Earth and the environmental effects, ecological effects on the atmosphere and life, like wildlife and things like that. And the reports I've seen so far is that they understand how low that power intensity has to be to get that power back to Earth. But it can be done. So, yeah, to answer your question, there's...
In the next 20 years or so?
Definitely. Yeah, we're working on... There's already projects looking at in-orbit assembly and obviously Space Forge with its in-orbit manufacturing. So this is absolute here and now. But those kids that are going through school now, they're going to be working on, you know, space superstructures and infrastructure in space. The space-based solar power station is, I don't understand the timeline for that, is the 15 years before they've got a fully operational installation.
And actually providing power down here.
Gigawatt level power. There's obviously a roadmap to that. There's experiments and demonstrators that have to go into space beforehand, and that's what we're working on now. But again, we're going to need people in the industry to come in and work on that, because at the moment, a colleague of mine said it's moving deck chairs at the moment. People within the industry are just moving from one company to another, which is fine because the experience is growing and growing and growing. But we need people to come into the industry to help us deal with all this work.
It's fascinating. Yes, really. Well, anything else? We've been talking for an hour and we've got some really interesting conversations from that. I find that really useful. Anything else that either of you were interested in contributing in general, or we can start to bring things to a close if that's okay. But anything else that crops up that you really wanted to think this is worth a chat about?
I think we've covered loads.
Sorry, Melissa, go ahead.
No, it's fine. I was just saying, you know, it's been really, really nice to chat.
I was hoping to pick up on the diversity of the industry as well, but I think you covered that really well before, Melissa, women in engineering, women in aerospace and all that kind of thing. I mean, my experience has been, because I started in space in, was it 2000? So, and as you said, Melissa, it was all middle-aged men, you know, that were doing that. And when I worked at one site, there was around 2,000 people on the site, and you could count the number of women on one hand. And what's happened is, as I've gone through my career and moved from company to company, there's been an influx of women into the industry, and it's created a much better working environment. You know, the different views that you get from you know, the different genders, but of course across you know, international partnerships as well. That's something else that space is really good at, and bringing in those different viewpoints creates an amazing culture. But also, you know, that working environment is it's second to none, really.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a ways to go still, but my background being more aviation, it's a lot better than that world.
I bet, yes.
And it is really exciting with, I guess, as they call it, the new space, people coming from different industries and backgrounds. And it is so important, I think, for the sector, because, as you said, Gary, it's bringing those different ways of thinking about things and problem solving. And, you know, some of these big problems we have here on Earth, and we need all the different brain power we can get to help solve them. And so for us, it's always been kind of fundamental that diversity that we look to achieve with Spaceport, and give some of these voices that maybe never had that chance before to kind of get on that stage as well, and bring their ideas. And for us, creating that culture, and the reason we've been able to deliver what we have for such a tiny team, as my pirate team, I like to call them, is we're purpose-led. It's very much that we're all here for a purpose, which is space for good, that we want to, you know, create and harness the power of space to do good in space and here on Earth. And everything we do filters through that. And we just, I think as an industry, yeah, we just need to continue to strive towards that, bringing those different backgrounds and genders into this industry, because it only will benefit all of us. And we've, you know, shown that from our side of things, it works. Yeah. Thinking of things a different way, a bit more of a maternal mindset across teams. When you're working on something as big as space and it seems dark and scary and, you know, quite stark, I think bringing a bit of warmth to that is really important, because it helps us make decisions as we become multiplanetary. You know, we've got to think about how we're going to do that in a way that is open to all. And it's not, you know, protecting democracy in space is so important. And I think we're at a slight fork in that, and it'll be interesting to see which way it goes with some of these, you know, the fact that corporations are kind of taking over from agencies a lot of the time, and seems like a lot of the power is in businesses rather than governments and nations now, and how that will pan out will be an interesting one for our kids and our children's children. But yeah, so as long as we can kind of set that foundation again on how we approach that and consider the different ways that we can do it is fundamental, and I believe we can.
Mm. Something else that I was wanting to ask you about, Melissa, was the regional development piece, because of course space in the UK was centered around the southeast for a long time, and these space clusters are popping up all over the place. Like Glasgow's got its own space hub, Leicester's got its own space hub, the Harwell space hub is huge. And of course what you guys have done down in Cornwall has, I think you alluded to it earlier, the growth in industry and the interest in how should we call it, like technical careers, is just growing. What's been your experience on like bringing the development to the Southwest?
As an economist, it's been interesting to see how it's developed, because we have set out not to replicate anything that's going on elsewhere. And that, I think, you know, each of those places you just mentioned has a USP, and we're not here to overlap. We want to add and enhance what's going on up there. And we're also very honest about what we are and what we're not, and the restrictions and constraints that we have down here in Cornwall. We don't have a huge skills base of what you just said, and we're not gonna, you know, capture the cadence that they might elsewhere with some of the projects and launches and operations going on. So what are we doing here? Well, it's actually using what assets we already have. So Goonhilly, who, you know, what Ian's done and is doing down there is just absolutely incredible, and he's such a mentor for me and our team. But then adding our asset of the spaceport onto that, so we've got a launch, we've got the tracking side of it. So how do we grow around that, and what's Cornwall's USP? And for us, we're starting to define that as what we started this conversation in, and is sustainability in space on the ground. Cornwall, you know, is well known with the university prowess we have, with the amazing organizations we have down here, like Surfers Against Sewage and the Eden Project. You know, we're very good at, you know, how we can start to fight climate change. And we want to kind of, with our cluster at Spaceport Cornwall around launch, is to work with that more sustainability in space, environmental intelligence, and really become a global hub for launching to space more sustainably, but also what we're putting into space is going on to do amazing things for our planet, and the industries down here being supported by it. So that's kind of where we're starting to kind of aim at, because we're not going to start from scratch. All that's there to be had. And I think with any kind of economic development or growth in a certain area, you've got to take what you have and the expertise you have and use it, and just, you know, start to push that. And, you know, with, I guess, the words leveling up being, you know, super trendy at the minute, it's that, but doing it in not a brand new area that nobody knows anything about. So for us, that's what it is taking what's already out there, supporting it, and doing it in our way that we know works well down here in Cornwall.
Yeah, I know a lot of the academic institutions across the UK, they're so complementary. So yeah. Falmouth and Exeter, the kind of space capabilities that they're working on absolutely complement the space capabilities being worked on at the University of Durham and Newcastle. So that's the other thing that we have to bear in mind.
Is that by design to some extent? Do they talk a lot with each other, these, and coordinate a lot of these different centres, or is it just happen to be how it's...
No, there's the KTN network, the Knowledge Transfer Network, right, and the Catapult and the UK Space Agency, and some of these agencies, they're good at bringing that academic research through the what we call the TRL stages, the technology readiness level, from that TRL 0 and 1, and getting those academic concepts into industry and the commercial side of things, and then getting that into space, so it goes to TRL 9. There's purpose in the what the academic institutions are doing, but like I say, they're geographically dispersed across the UK, and they're all doing some of their research overlaps, but a lot of it doesn't. So I know, for example, I've been working with some universities in the Northeast recently, and their capabilities in communications unparalleled. And I know when you mentioned Falmouth's new facility, Melissa, I'm afraid it's been too long since I did work with them, but they had a space course down in Falmouth, and they were looking at some novel technology for use in space as well. So the academic side of things is not something I'm close to, but when I talk to colleagues and peers about what's happening in the academic institutions, it's equally fascinating.
Well, thanks so much again to Melissa Quinn, Head of Spaceport Cornwall, and Gary Cannon, Space Segment Lead at Satellite Applications Catapult. It's such an exciting sector, space, and there are so many possibilities in terms of technologies and skills, and it's going to be a big growth sector, or it is starting to be, for the UK. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to put in your diary the date for our live event, Advanced Engineering, on the 1st and 2nd of November at the NEC. And have a look at our website for more podcasts at advancedengineeringuk.com. Thanks, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.